Welcome to the Jazz Treasury. My name is Rich Sylvester, and thank you so much for letting me in your ear once again. Today, we look at the life and the music of Fats Waller. Everything about Fats Waller was larger than life. He weighed 285 pounds, stood close to 6 feet tall, and had a gargantuan appetite for alcohol, food, and the good life. In his tragically short life, he made hundreds of records, wrote dozens of songs, and won over the hearts of millions. But he was also one of the most influential pianists and the composer of several Broadway shows. Thomas Wright Fats Waller's story began in New York on May 21st, 1904. He was born and raised in the Harlem area, and throughout his career, Fats was torn between the values instilled in him by his family and the call of Harlem lowlife. Drink, loose women, and music revelry. He enthusiastically threw himself into his keyboard studies once his family acquired an inexpensive piano. In fact, it was a Waters upright. His passion for music undoubtedly drove him to practice hard. Within only a few lessons, Fats was playing complete pieces by ear and refusing to read sheet music. As well as the piano, Fats took to the organ, inspired by the Lincoln Theater's organist, Mazie Mullins. And he would join Mazie in the pit, watching and learning from her. And before long, 15-year-old Fats was standing in for her, and when she finally left, he got his first musical job as organist at the Lincoln at $23 a week. Among the many awestruck friends who joined Fats at the $10,000 Wurlitzer organ was the young Bill Basie, later to become Count Basie, who gained his lifelong love of the organ from his days sitting alongside Fats. Also, it was during this time at the Lincoln that Fats discovered alcohol, and he was frequently ticked off for disposing of empty gin bottles in the pipework of the organ. Fats also sought help from Stride pioneer James P. Johnson, the dean of the new school of ragtime-derived music popular in Harlem. Johnson took the young Fats seriously, introducing him to the Harlem rent party circuit, where families short of the rent money would throw a party, hire a pianist to entertain, cook food for the neighborhood, and charge a modest fee for tenants to cover the rent. Fats worked as a delivery boy for a busy delicatessen. He was also a familiar character around the neighborhood. Interestingly, Fats was hired for this job because of his ample frame. The owners, who specialized in illicit alcohol, wanted Fats to conceal bottles of liquor in his jacket while delivering more innocuous-looking groceries. Fats Waller once said, "I was born in Harlem, kicking and screaming. I quit kicking, but I'm still screaming." Fats began composing his first music for piano roles, starting with "Got to Cool My Doggies Now," and in October 1922, made his recording debut with Oki Records with "Muscle Shoal Blues" and "Birmingham Blues." At 19, Fats had yet to become the boisterous, confident performer we know from his 1930s discs, even though his keyboard technique was still developed. By 1929, when he made many of his best piano solo recordings, Fats was already an experienced show composer with many songs to his credit. Now let's listen to two original Fats Waller tunes. The first one we'll be hearing is "Handful of Keys," recorded in New York City, 1929, Fats Waller doing the solo piano work. And the next one you'll be hearing is "The Minor Drag," again, a Fats Waller original. This one featuring Charlie Gaines on trumpet, Charlie Urbis on trombone, Arvil Harris on clarinet and alto, Fats Waller on piano, and Eddie Condon on banjo. Both of these tracks were recorded in New York City on January 3rd, 1929. Thank you. had learned the craft the hard way, on the road. Fats and his songwriter partner, Andy Rassef, were reputed to have sold the same song several times in one day and to have drunk the proceeds by nightfall. By the end of the decade, Fats had also written several shows, of which the most famous were Shuffle Along and Hot Chocolates. The latter included Ain't Misbehavin', the song that turned both Louis Armstrong and Cab Calloway into stars.
Listening to the Jazz Treasury Podcast with Rich Sylvester.
Just have to touch my cup. You're my sugar. tasting lips, the honey valley drips. Your confection goodness knows honeysuckle rose.
Fats Waller, doing one of his classics, Honeysuckle Rose, recorded back in 1934 in New York City. Bill Coleman on trumpet, Gene Sedgwick on clarinet, Fats Waller on the piano and vocals, Al Casey on guitar, Bill Taylor on bass, and Harry Dial on drums. Characteristically, Fats is reputed to have dashed off his songs at a gallop, often aiming to set them down note-perfect himself at a single sitting. Sometimes he would leave that arduous task to his collaborator, Rassef, whose most famous story was that Fats dictated the middle section of Honeysuckle Rose to him over the telephone. In 1929, he was contracted by RCA Victor to record with a band. The studio management was so concerned that he might not show up for the sessions, given his fondness for the good life, that they appointed guitarist Eddie Condon to look after him. Unfortunately, Condon's capacity for liquor was even greater than Fats, and they both awoke on somebody's floor on the morning of the session with no band organized and no music written. Fats made some quick phone calls and wrote two tunes in the back of the taxi as it sped them to the studio. 90 minutes later, The Minor Drag and Harlem Fuss were recorded. By this time, Fats had begun composing his first music for piano roles. Also, in 1929, Fats made a series of piano solos that showed he had a rather different compositional talent to craft perfect piano solos within 3.5 minute span of a 78 RPM record. His pieces from that time, such as Handful of Keys, have become classics of jazz piano, justly celebrated for their perfect construction and balance. But in 1929, with the Depression, the market for freelance show composers and recording artists suddenly fell apart. And instead of supplementing a healthy income as an organist by composing and recording, Fats was suddenly facing a rather grim future. Using all his energy, enthusiasm, and the greatest left hand in all of pianodom, Fats gave his all in recording sessions. According to his friend and manager, Ed Kirkaby, Fats would work himself into the ground for anyone he liked, providing there was plenty of gin on hand. Despite his fame and respected positions in the music industry, Fats could still display alarming immaturity. In the early 1930s, many gigs were ruined by court officials arriving to present Fats with a summons for refusing to pay alimony. But it was Fats who was his own worst enemy, for he would often decide that he'd had enough of the road and head back to New York whether or not the tour was over. The professionalism that he brought to his work in the studio didn't always spill over into his work with a touring group, and his new manager, Ed Kirkaby, began to have trouble booking the band despite the success of their discs. Fats did travel to the UK in the summers of 1938 and 1939, the last tour being cut short by the outbreak of war, and during his visits in which he headlined at the London Palladium, he made several discs, notably on the famous Compton organ at EMI's. Well, let's listen to another Fats Waller classic, Blue Turning Gray Over You, recorded in 1937 in New York City, with Herman Autry on trumpet, Gene Sedgwick on clarinet and tenor, Fats Waller on piano, Al Casey guitar, Charlie Turner bass, and Slick Jones on the drums. Blue Turning Gray Over You. But the strain was beginning to tell, and he abused his system by drinking quantities of alcohol that would fell a normal person in a few weeks, and went without sleep for days on end. He indulged in giant food binges, in which he ate several meals at one sitting, and constantly moved from party to party and club to club. Just before Christmas, 1943, he was on his way home by train from the West Coast, where he'd had a bout of pneumonia, and despite his illness, Fats nevertheless finished the engagement, but he also stayed up for the all-night party and caught the long-haul express train back east. Just as the train got to Kansas City, Waller's big heart gave out, and he died in the arms of his manager and friend, Ed Kirkaby. Harlem turned out in droves to remember Fats Waller, and his family friend, the Reverend Adam Clayton Powell, later a pillar of the human rights movement, read the address at a packed memorial. And during the memorial concert, groups of grim-faced musicians stood about. Suddenly, one remembered a funny story about Fats. Someone also remembered another, and then another, until soon everyone was roaring with laughter. Fats wouldn't have wanted it any other way. Well, that's it for this episode of The Jazz Treasury with Rich Sylvester. We learned about the life and music of Fats Waller. And I wish we could go on to so many more songs that he's written. And he's influenced so many people, ladies and gentlemen, from Thelonious Monk on. Anyway, next time we're going to visit Jazz City, New Orleans on the Jazz Treasury. So be sure to tune in. And thank you so much for listening. Go to www.thejazztreasury.com for more information or like us on Facebook. Bye for now. Enjoy the jazz.